Welcome to the Rugby Pass podcast. Doesn't have a name yet. That's fine. My name is James McConey, and with me, the good news is we've got a three-way. And with me is 100 test All Black Mills Muliaina and zero test broadcaster Rick Salizzo. That's probably not fair. We can go into Rick's CV a bit later on, but welcome. How's it going?
Oh, very well. Very well, thank you. It's good to be amongst a three-way and in the middle.
See, I'm not so keen, but, you know, a little bit older.
It's just the start. Look, I tell you what, though, we haven't got a name for this. We'll come to that later.
Why haven't you got a name for it? Like, that's normally the starting place.
Yeah, I know. I just
that's your department, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Why do you call it the McConey Show?
No, I'm not keen on that. I was thinking the Bill Ellis podcast, you know, like a William Webb Ellis
reference. Oh, nice. Yeah, that's good.
The Bill Ellis.
Welcome to the Bill Ellis podcast.
Okay, well then, or the Just a Phase, or is that too, that's a bit too punny, isn't it? Just a Phase.
Yeah, that's a bit, eh?
Makes it sound like we're going to get canned after a couple of weeks. So, look, All Blacks versus Springboks, 16-all. Should we be worried, Mills Muliaina?
No, I don't think so. I mean, in fact, the last probably two games, if we had lost one or two, I wouldn't have been worried at all. I think there's an obvious plan going ahead. There's two different teams that we've sort of heard the coaches talk about. But I think the only real concern for me is that some of the mistakes that they're making are sort of the basic stuff, which is, I don't know whether it's rust or just not concentrating. So that's the only real concern for me. And big Brody Retallick. I hope it's only just a dislocation.
Yeah. He's got an MRI this week. He's hopeful. He said to me, I've spoken to Brody, but he said he reckons it's 6 weeks, so that's quite good. That's quite good news. Rick, what about you? When you watched that game, what were your thoughts?
You know, the last two games have sort of reminded me a little bit of the beginning of the World Cup in 2015. You know, when we were sort of all going, oh, man, they're not playing well. You know, oh, my God, what's going on? And saying that, you don't want to gloss over what they're not getting right, because I think they'll be sitting down today and going, right, well, we've had these two different teams out there, but we need to improve in these areas. So how do we improve? I think they'll probably give themselves a pass mark for the things that they're looking to do, you know, the Mwanga-Barrett combination, all those sorts of things. I'm shattered about Brody Retallick, but I'm pleased that we've got Scott Barrett coming back, because I think he's a world-class player. But I think what pleased me on Saturday was South Africa had everything going their way, and we played averagely for the first half an hour, and it was 6-0.
Yeah.
They just couldn't score. And we there's probably as bad a 30 minutes I've seen us play for a long time. So when we, in the second half, when we started to put things together, we looked like we were half a beat away from scoring quite regularly. So, you know, I feel okay, but we've got to keep getting better.
It's a fair point from Rick, and he is a broadcaster of some repute. If we just go into his ill repute, founder of Sports Cafe, which is a show in New Zealand that's did pretty well. Rick, doesn't matter, that's not important. I thought that it's a good point about our defence, but Mills, were they holding stuff back, and have you been in a team where you've held stuff back because you know you're going to face them in a month's time or whatever at a World Cup?
Yeah, definitely been in a team that's held stuff back. It didn't go too well, though, because by the time we actually got to trying to use it, well, we were knocked out of the World Cup, you know? Yeah. And so that's the scary part about it is, you know, that a lot of the players have spoken about it in the weekend, saying, you know, there's a few things there that we need to, that we haven't sort of got out there and we're working on. What that looks like, you know, who knows? I'm from what I'm sort of reading into, they're going to try a few things against the Australians, because they've always said the championship, although it's important, they feel that putting the Bledisloe back in the cabinet is the thing to do. If they lose it, then, you know, it's no big deal. But
what sort of stuff do you hold back, like a backline move or?
I think different sequences, right. You know, like how you work sort of different plays.
Explain a sequence, because a lot of people don't know what a sequence is.
So back when we were playing, it was more a sort of a template. Okay, you're gonna use in that case, it was called an Auckland. You know, you hit one up and then go around the edge and then maybe come back. So those little things. And then what you do is you work different moves off that structure. Mm. So it's more structured now. She's gotten a lot different. We have four guys in the middle, and then you kind of work sort of that strategy. But all in all, you know, it takes a bit of time to get those right and get guys in certain areas and make sure that everyone knows the role. And buy-in, I think that's probably the biggest thing. You know, if guys are unsure, they go back to what they're sort of used to, and that's possibly where, you know, your guys aren't on the same page.
Well, you think of the 2011 World Cup where we Woodcock scored that try from that move in the line. Was that something you guys had done before and then go, that worked, let's put it up our sleeve and pull it out when we need it?
I think we might have, the forwards might have actually looked at it for an Australian test, didn't quite use it. But that there is just a move that they sort of had come up with. That comes down to coaching. You know, looking at the analysis and saying, well, if we're down there, and I think it might have been the first line out in the 22, this is going to be our move that will hopefully get us the 5 points. And in that case, it did.
Yeah.
You're going to have all those sort of things, but it's more sort of your moves back towards the halfway and how you set everything up. Also, your kicking game and that. So that's where Bowden Barrett and Richie Moonga is crucial. Then that combination that they used in the weekend becomes, you know, pretty crucial.
Yeah, that was an interesting one. I mean, the first half it didn't seem to work that well. Second half it was okay. If it wasn't for that brilliant move at the end, it would have probably been hailed a success. But the fact South Africa scored isn't a bad thing, is it? That we get a bit more introspective. I know talkback goes mental, but there is something in that, isn't there? Like going away thinking that we need more work-ons and, like you say, those basics.
Yeah, I mean, it was just scrappy. Rick, I mean, it was just kind of like there's no continuity in it. I mean, and you're right, it was just half a pass or a pass away from sticking, and then all of a sudden you're on the front foot. But the thing that worried me the most is that the last two weeks, teams have really slowed our ball down.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've sort of, the longer we've held the ball, the worse it's become. And so they've got to get that balance right in how they sort of...
Is that because we're not clearing bodies out of the ruck or not?
A lot of factors. I think disruption, the way the defence is, being hit behind the gain line, got ball carriers not doing their work in terms of getting it, hitting a weak shoulder, and clean out. So I think those are the things when you speak about, you know, what they're looking at, what we can tick off. Those are the areas that the All Blacks will be looking at.
They looked like they were creating space out wide, though. They just couldn't quite get there.
Yeah.
You know, like the way the South Africans were defending. I mean, the try we scored was a classic example of, you know, they're coming in, there was some space, we found that space and we executed. But the thing that was frustrating for me but also calming for me is the guys that were making mistakes were quality players, like Ricker. You know, possibly one of the best wingers in the world, you know, probably, definitely. Just couldn't get into the game. Now we know he's going to come right, you know, and he'll probably come right the next time he plays, because all he needed to do was catch the ball.
Yeah.
You know? But is that, you know, we talk about rhythm, you know, and rust and all these sorts of things. Is that just because this combination hasn't played together enough?
Yeah, I think there's those factors. Also, I think I heard him say in the post-match versus Steve saying that guys are thinking too much, and that sometimes that happens because you want guys to think, but all of a sudden, you know, I'm thinking about all these other options that's happening. What can I do to make sure they don't rush? But then the guy beside me is doing the same thing, and then all of a sudden we're on different pages. So I think the classic example was against Argentina when you rush, you want to kick.
Mm.
And when I say kick, but you actually kick to try and retrieve, kick to slow down that outside. And then you sort of work it so that then the outside guys have to actually think and say, well, I'm going to hold back a little bit. And when they do that, that's when you start going wide. The unfortunate part at the moment when you say rust and combinations is one guy's thinking one thing, the other guy's thinking another. And then when they go to put a kick in, that they're on two different pages. And
then, like this show.
Well, yeah, exactly. You can't even make up the name of this bloody thing.
No,
so.
No, it's a real shambles. Let's have a listen to Steve Hansen, actually, and see what he said. I remember him, like you said, he said they're not thinking, but this is something else from him.
We've chosen over the last 2 weeks to play two different sides, you know, and haven't had a lot of preparation time, so we knew that at times with the new stuff we're introducing that we were going to be a little off, and we were. But there's enough signs there to say that, you know, if we keep working away, get our timing better, get our execution better, then we're going to be able to hurt some teams. So we're not going to panic. We'll just take a big, deep breath and keep moving.
It's a great Graham Henry, better in the ordinary.
Better.
Yeah, my favourite cheese is feta. He is, I guess he's saying what you guys said, paraphrase, but he said there's promising signs. So let's talk about promising signs then. What was good about it, Rick?
I think that the first thing is that where people make a mistake is it's not black or white. Like if we win, everything's not good. If we lose, everything's not bad. If we draw, everything's, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
You know, so they're looking at it in detail. And the things that I thought came right was, you're a lot better at this than I am, but I just thought having that space really suited Bowden Barrett, you know, and, you know, kick to him at your peril.
Yeah.
You know, you get Ben Smith, Rico, you only Bowden Barrett. What a combination. I thought line-out was good. I thought they really put the South African line-out under a lot of pressure because there was a point where the South Africans were throwing the ball and then they had doubt.
Yeah.
I thought that was good. At times our scrum was good, but then we switched off a couple of times, you know, so that's mental. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I thought Aaron Smith looked really good when he came on. You know, hungry. He's got such a great delivery.
Mm.
I thought TJ did some great stuff. He's such a great ball player. He got those two crucial turnovers. So I mean, the big thing to look out of it at two games is depth.
Yeah, man.
I'm got incredible depth.
It's crazy, yeah. That's what I felt as well. But before I go into that, Mills, was there anyone else? I thought Jack Goodhue looked rather good at centre.
When you've got games like this, when it's really tight and close and it's not going to be a blowout, you expect guys to actually do their job and do it really well. And here's a guy that sort of over-exceeded that. He went out there, he was physical in defence, he worked his ass off. In terms of that support line that he did, he had no right to get there because I think Kobe was out was a lot faster than him. But yeah, he worked hard that whole time, on attack, yeah, a couple of things, and I think that's what Steve was alluding to, that the timing wasn't right. There was one there when he got a little bit flat and there was a big hole there that he could have possibly exploded into, but because he got a little bit flat, he wasn't quite able to break that sort of space. So he was awesome. I agree with what Rick's saying about the Bowden and Bowden Barrett and Mwonga situation. I think it just needs time because Bowden looks comfortable. The biggest thing about going back there is for him to, I suppose, to be able to, you know, let go of some of that responsibility and let Richie run the cutter. And that's what Richie's done so well for the Crusaders. Now you do that and get a bit of spacing and awareness and things between the two of them. I think they can be lethal.
Yeah. should a player ever... Sorry, I'm going to have to... Should a player ever be charged down twice in a row?
Good sign, though. I mean, imagine... I know if I was playing footy and someone charged me down, my head would go down for the rest of the game. I would fall all apart. But he just fought back into it. I thought it was the quality of the net.
Yeah.
Yeah. that's the hardest thing. It's the hardest thing when you're in that position, and that's why I never got myself in that position to kick from the base, because you've got to get your. I mean, the pressure's always on you. He cleaned it up well, which was comforting.
Yeah, yeah. He's still a freak of nature. I like the double pivot experiment. I just think I guess there were other things there in that game. Like, for example, Matt Todd, who's on a hiding to nothing. Have we ever had a player who has to come in as like a seat holder in the Oscars? You know what I mean? Like, you've got to basically sit there while Brad Pitt's up on stage. And he still did a really, really good job.
For me, he personifies what all Macs are about.
Yeah.
And he,
yeah.
Whenever you call on him, he's there.
Yeah.
He makes the absolute... everything out of his ability. Like you go 100% there, he's always playing above that.
Yeah.
He's just an incredible footballer. And I think, you know, as a teammate, you go, he's on. I remember back in the old days, you know, and I remember when Robin Brook got injured and they called in Andy Earle for a test match. And he was up in the mountains in the snow grabbing sheep and stuff. And they rang him and they said, it's Wednesday night. we need you to come to Brisbane. You're playing at Ballymore on Saturday.
Yeah.
And everyone in the team went, we'll be fine. Because we know that we can rely on him.
Yeah, you know.
And he's gone from -5 to 25 degrees, and he's like, we can rely on him. And Matt Todd's like that.
I agree. To finish my point is that I think he's still got a good chance of going to Japan, because turnovers are everything now. And if you're Artie and Sam are ahead of him, but they might think about playing with those guys who can actually win turnovers and get your possession when you have no right to get it. I just feel like it's hard on him because he doesn't get named in the squad. He gets brought in and has to learn everything, you know, probably later than everyone else. He doesn't have his kit with MT embroidered on it. You know what I mean? Like, it's just... It does suck, doesn't it? But, I mean, I liked what he did. I just feel like, you know, he becomes a bit of a scapegoat sometimes.
Well, I think that's where it becomes interesting, because the makeup of the whole your 31 becomes interesting now, because if we're realistic, no one has actually stepped up in the number 6 jersey.
Yeah.
I know Frizzell and Fifita played, you know, reasonably well, but they haven't really said that, well, that's going to be my jersey. So if I was going to look at it now, I'd say you'd go with your Kane, Savia. Well, he has to, really, for me. Yeah. He's got to start somewhere, whether it's 8 or 7. And then, you know, obviously you've got your captain. And that's why I think, you know, possibly Matt Todd will go. He will go to the World Cup. Yeah. And then your Scooter Barrett will obviously have to, step up. But then it becomes, you know, who else is going to be on the bench? Because you're going to have either a Lock Lucy or do you go now down Lock? So that's where selection, for me, becomes interesting, because I think, you know, Matt Todd actually warrants going to the World Cup.
Yeah, I'm a big Matt Todd fan. Tiny players. Should we have more tiny players? They cut us up. They're two little Lilliputians, won the game for them. In New Zealand, we're a bit sizeless, right? You know, like, because Brad Webber was left out probably because he's, you know, 70
kgs. Just to clarify that, just so people know, what position did you play?
a large sort of like a cuddly number 10.
We're looking for the opposite of you.
Opposite of me, absolutely. Someone who can run. So the thing is, like, if you...
Who do you have in mind?
Well, Vilimone Kiroi. Basically, he is our... Colby Cheese. Sorry, I've got his name wrong. Cheslin Colby, right? But, I mean, he is our Colby Cheese. And so he's played the New Zealand Sevens. He's battles away at Mitre 10 Cup level. But no one really considers him a serious prospect for the All Blacks. Well, they haven't yet. But he beats players. He's rapid. He is like that guy. He's pretty much like that guy. But we always want the bigger athlete in New Zealand. Tiny players.
Hey, Severisa's tiny.
Wow.
But explosively tiny, right?
He's a little battleship, though, isn't he?
So he's about the same size as Kiroi.
Yeah.
What does Kiroi play in 15s?
Oh, 15.
Fullback. Yeah.
Fullback.
Yeah.
No, I mean, Severisa's a bit
solid.
So
when you're saying not only short, but you're also saying slight as well, aren't you?
I'm saying tiny players. I'm saying guys that look like children running out there, and I was impressed. I mean, they had two of them, and I don't know. Halfbacks are small, but he got up high enough to...
I think what you're talking about is, rather than an All Black issue, is more of a global rugby issue, is that I think I, for the first time in my life, agree with you, that I think in the development program, we spend too much time worrying about size.
Yeah.
And we need to encourage great footballers. And great... Look, Brad Webber.
Mm.
You know, I mean, great footballers can be great footballers. And sometimes when they're a bit smaller, they're more determined, they're more quicker, that they just work out. I've always been a fan of rugby players that make the most out of what they've got. You look at Grant Fox.
Yeah.
You know, probably wasn't the quickest guy, didn't have a sidestep, but you know, you would rely on him to win a test match, because he would make the absolute most out of every bit of ability he had.
Mm-hmm.
And, so I agree with you. But you wouldn't fill that tiny player quota if you were playing.
No, I'm just saying. I mean,
we would fill three of those tiny player quotas.
We did have Damien, and remember how he was held back for a while. I felt like we held him back
for a
while.
But we shouldn't just go out looking for little people.
No, I think we should.
I'm totally all for the little person quota, because, I mean, right now,
for example,
do you think we're too big?
We're all obsessed about matching South Africa, but we don't have a Peter Steph Du Toit in New Zealand rugby. I mean, he is amazing, that guy. But Jordan Taufua, who's, 6'1" at a pinch, he doesn't get a look in.
What do you mean he doesn't get a look in? He was in the All Blacks last year, he just got injured.
He didn't get to play, did he?
Because he was injured.
But
he hasn't been back in since. You know what I'm saying? So I just feel there is a sizes thing. Like, you know, Phil Ward, George Smith might have made the All Blacks here. You know, would have found some excuse because, you know, whereas they play 100 tests for someone else, is there something in the... We don't like small people.
Well, man, you imagine RG Snyman smacking one little... picking up one little... small person, mate, wouldn't even survive the weight. That's what I mean.
That was vicious. He came on from the side,
that was good because I thought that's something I give credit to the All Blacks because I think a lot of international teams, if the best one of your best players have been taken out by a guy coming on the side, it would have been full next papers. Yeah. Oh my God, that's cheating, thug, you know. But it's like,
I don't blame Snyman either because the refs have never policed that well. They still don't know what to do at the breakdown. They're still not sure about forward passes. They're definitely unsure about mauls because we took down a maul at the end of that Argentina game to win it. And any other game I've watched this season, that's a penalty try under the post. We had a good rub of the green last week. This week,
I agree with Rick. I agree with
me.
No, well, yeah, I don't because I don't know too much about that bloody Moore, eh? So we'll let that go. Right. But you're right, it would have been plastered all over the world media that we're dirty, we're this, and that. The All Blacks have just come out and said, well, the only probably thing is he just came inside. You know, Fia Dinkum, though. Mm. You know, he hit him hard, and that's what you want. If someone's going to be doing that, that's exactly what the All Blacks would be wanting to do, to clear him out of the way and obviously hurt him.
Mm. Yeah, I know.
When you see someone exposed there.
Oh yeah, that's the biggest thing. Yeah, that's your biggest thing.
And that's a problem with someone prone on the side. They are just sitting there like a giant tackle bag, really, because he had a free shot at him, and he didn't miss. So.
What was he going to do? If you're like that and you're trying to get at the ball, do you expect him to turn up and just go, keep him in a crack at the
ball? Well, you're supposed to go through the gate, aren't you? He came a little bit. I mean, the gate is the big mystery.
I think we all agree he came on the side, and it was really unfortunate what happened to Brodie because he's a world-class player, and we don't want to see any player hurt like that.
Mm.
No.
But, you accept it and you move on.
Yeah.
Exactly. We have accepted that. One last note on this test match is I miss Kevin Mialamu, because he was a forward who knew how to play in the backs. Do you know what I'm saying here, Mills?
Dane Coles.
What Dane Coles? What happened? What Dane Coles came on, did it?
I know he did.
Cody Taylor can do it.
I know, but what I'm saying is, it's not that they are just as dynamic, if not more dynamic than Kevin was. But Kevin knew when to give the ball, when to basically, you know what I mean?
He was probably the most annoying guy when you played the warm up touch rugby.
Yeah.
Because he just went hundy. And he was doing little wee kicks, doing all these little back moves like he was a little wee touch player. But, yeah, he's a very skillful man. But you've got guys like Cody Taylor and Dane Coles there.
Oh, I mean, I agree. I'm not saying I'm not picking on the hookers. I'm just saying...
They can play like backs, though, don't you think? Dane Coles?
They can play like backs. I'm talking about Kevin Mialamu's judgment on when to give the pass. All these little things... like a centre. He knows, like, when Kevin Mialamu was in the back line, you knew he's going to give it at exactly the right time and all of that sort of stuff. And the pass is going to be perfect. You know what I mean? I think those guys who are really good athletes, they love to run. And I think passing is probably their, third option maybe. But not, I'm not picking on anyone.
More offloads. They're more offloaders.
Distributor, right? Yeah.
They'll go as far as they possibly can. Yeah. Whereas I like the fact that Mialamu just, nothing.
So you're looking for more of a Conrad Smith style hooker.
Keep that flow going. Yeah. it's all about the flow.
Right.
Keep the flow going.
Right. Okay. Wallabies, that's all about the All Blacks. So I've got the try highlights here, but we're not going to worry about that. Wallabies beat the Pumas 16-10 in Brisbane. Are the Wallabies dangerous again? Either of you can jump in on that one. Mills, you've played. Did you watch that?
I watched bits of it.
Okay.
I wasn't expecting that result. Are the Wallabies dangerous?
I thought the Pumas would win.
I thought the Pumas would go there and win.
Okay.
Are they a threat? Absolutely they are. They always have been. It's just about getting everything else right over there, right?
Yeah.
I thought the Pumas would just bomb the crap out of them and just and contest and niggle at them and be a lot more physical. But hey, credit to the Australians. I mean, from where they've come, and hopefully, you know, they're building towards that World Cup. It'll be interesting to see what happens in Perth.
Yeah, I don't think anyone would. I don't think the All Blacks would ever underestimate the Wallabies challenge.
Mm.
I mean, you know, because every time you do that, they bite you. So, I mean, it wasn't the greatest game of rugby I've ever seen in my life. But that, you know, they got the win. For the Wallabies, that was all they needed to do, where they had to win that game. That was everything. And they got that. Will they be a tough challenge for us? Of course they will. They always are.
Yeah. I thought the Pumas, they provided the best move of the match, and we might actually try and show this on Crowgo as well tonight. They went the length of the field and then just got pulled up one short of the line. It was very it looked very French. And then they got the ball wide and some forward got in the way. That's why Kevin Mealamu would have never done that. He would have just made sure it but anyway, that killed the move. Should we plug his gym in South Auckland as well, just to give sweeten them? But I think, there was something about the Pumas playing on that hard surface that made me think they're not just about the big resolute defence and their forwards. If the weather's good in Japan, maybe they could just go nuts.
Oh, they can play. Yeah. Man, they can definitely play. And that's probably the biggest change in their whole game. You know, the likes of some of their backs, Bofelli, Moyano and Co, and that, like, they cut you up. And so, and what's the other part of their game that's probably, I suppose, they haven't sort of touched too much on or concentrated on, they are used to being a big forward pack that dominate at scrum time. Mm.
And it's they don't do anymore.
It's really weird. But they can absolutely play if they can if they can get things right.
And Montero is one of the best players in the world.
Montero is amazing, isn't he?
They've got some small players.
They do. They don't mind the little players and stuff. The Argies.
I think this idea of the Argentinians being big, powerful forwards, scrummaging, it's like 5-10 years old. The way they've been playing recently is not that style. I mean, they are cutting teams up. They've got exciting backs, you know, one of the best first fives in the game. They've got material wide, you know. I just think they are a really exciting side. I mean, their results have been poor. You know, they haven't won for, what was it, like 20 games or something like that? It's a long time.
Yeah, there's been, they've had that issue, I think, with their best players like Sanchez playing in the Northern Hemisphere. They haven't had a first five with the Jaguares, who can run the ship as well as him.
But they're always a quarter-finalists, aren't they? Absolutely. They're always a quarter-finalist.
I agree they're exciting. I just think that maybe we need to consider them in those good conditions in September in the Rugby World Cup.
You see them as a semi-finalist?
Yeah, I do. That's where I sort of think, well, they could, because they won't mind going toe-to-toe with England or Ireland or anything in the forwards. And then meanwhile, I thought that one move. And we will show it on Crowd Goes Wild. It's a really good show, that. Look, I want to talk about the return of Christian Lelefano and James O'Connor. Obviously, Lelefano, amazing story coming back from his diagnosis of leukemia a couple of years ago, and we saw him make his way back to Super Rugby, and now he's playing Test Rugby. How great is that? And also just keeping the faith and making sure that he was, you know, he was determined to get back and play at this level.
And perhaps exactly what the Australians needed, you know, stability, resilience, and what he's shown in terms of what he's gone through life in a really key position. We actually, you talked about it before, Andy Earle coming back, but that's the sort of guy you want to look up to, Lelefano, and saying, well, you know, he's not going to go erratic, or, you know, he's going to stay strong. Anything goes wrong, you know what he's been through life. That you know, he'll show some resilience, and so it's a fantastic story. James O'Connor coming back, it's probably a sign that, you know, the lack of depth that the Australians and the Wallabies sort of have, in particular in that position. You've obviously, Folau's not going to be there. Kirtley Beall needs to step up a bit.
Maybe the Honey Badger, bring him back.
Is he still in Japan?
That didn't work for him. I'm not sure, but he definitely had the one that he liked.
Is it true that you're the next bachelor?
No, I wouldn't be. I've been a bachelor too long. They said, we just need somebody who's been on the show for a couple of years. Yeah, someone with at least a recent dating history. So, no, they didn't want me for that.
Don't you think that the Lily Afano thing is amazing? I mean, I don't know him.
Yeah.
But just respect him so much as a person. What he's been through, his perspective on life must be incredible.
Yeah.
To the determination to get through what he went through, the rugby must be easy for him.
Yeah.
You know, and but not only to come back, but to just come back to the highest level and help them win a test match is incredible. Now, O'Connor's quite different. And O'Connor probably gives everyone hope that, you know, when you're a young man, you make a lot of mistakes. Mm. I'm saying that from experience. And sometimes people give up on you because you just do so many dumb things. But eventually, you get it right sometimes, you know, and maybe he's getting it right, you know. I don't know. I mean, I'm not there. But it sort of, you know, from a different point perspective, it sort of gave us all hope, you know. When you're getting it wrong and everyone's dumping on you, if you just sort of go away, reinvent yourself, there's always a chance.
Mm.
So
do people dump on him? That's a bit weird. Right.
Like Quade Cooper did in Super Rugby this year, right?
Yeah.
You know, he came back well.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, well, that's good. I'm happy to see James O'Connor back giving it a nudge. Taniela Tupou, the Tongan Thor, as he was known when he was at Sacred Heart College, which is a Catholic boys' school. Rick, you're part of the Sacred Heart Mafia. So you can tell us how we lost Taniela Tupou, because when he came on for the Wallabies, I thought he was outstanding, almost as good as Kevin Mealamu.
Yeah. I mean, he's a good young man. And a freakish athlete, because, you know, they have that size and power, but also he's got speed and ball skills. It's an incredible combination. His scrummaging's improved out of sight, and you know, a lot of time when you have ball running props, they're sort of just looking for a bit of a rest at scrum time, and you can't do that at international level. And he's a genuine threat at scrummaging time. You know, a world class player, but it's. You know, I know how desperate everyone was to keep him here, but maybe he's getting the opportunities over there because, you know, less props but, you know, I mean, it's just good to see him playing international rugby.
Yeah. Yeah, that was pleasing. The other thing I liked was the Pumas away jerseys. I thought they were very cool. Did you like those as well, Mills? Have you got a favourite jersey that you kept? Probably Chiefs one, eh?
Chiefs one, mate. I haven't really got a favourite, to be totally honest. Jerseys are...
How many of your 100 All Black jerseys have you kept?
Mate, I couldn't tell you. I swapped a few.
Have you got more than 20?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I'd say, yeah, probably got up 70 or 80% of them.
Oh, right.
I didn't swap too many.
What do you do with them?
Yeah. They just sit in bags.
Oh.
Well, mate, I'm not rocking down them in Ponsonby Road in my bloody All Black jersey anymore, mate.
Why not? I would.
Well, one, I wouldn't fit it.
No, neither would I.
And, gee, man, what an idiot. Who would want to do that?
That would be cool, man. Like, let's do it. Like, that would be cool. Like, I would do that down Ponsonby Road wearing, do you know what, and we get 70 to 80 people wearing Mills Mullet and their test jerseys down Ponsonby Road.
When
we
did on Sports Cafe, we had Zinzan Brook was on the show, and when he retired... The next week, we got him to wear a number 8 All Black jersey, and we did a skit that he was walking down the street and no one recognised him.
It's good.
Yeah.
That's good to know that your jerseys are in bags. Are they in sort of like good bags, or are they just in like rubbish bags?
No, kit bags, Adidas bags.
All right, okay.
Yeah. How many of those you got?
I didn't keep too much stuff. Eh? As long as I had one piece of everything. Of each item that was sort of given at outfitting, I was happy. The jersey, I mean, I'm not really sentimental when it comes to stuff like that.
But they'll be important as you get older and to your children and all that sort of stuff. So, you know,
that's it.
To McConey.
Yeah, you know. I'll be around.
Well, if you can get into one, mate, I'll be happy.
Well, that could be part of the challenge, wouldn't it? You know, like when we go down Ponsonby Road in your jerseys. I think we're going to talk about the Pacific Nations Cup just briefly because...
Did you see the conditions?
Yes, Samoa beat Tonga in a mud bath, in a proper mud bath. I've never seen anything like it in recent memory. Like, you have to go back a long way. Remember there was the water polo test or whatever they called it? 75 at Eden Park. I remember pictures of that. So, Mills, this was an absolute mud bath, but they played some good rugby, all things considered. Samoa getting up
25-17.
Well, I suppose when you got conditions like that, it just evens everything out. I thought the actual Tongans would dominate that game and come away with the win.
Yeah.
But when you're playing in conditions like that, it really comes down to how well you use the ball and how you keep in opportunities, really. But it's surprising, as you say, that weather. They had the Pacific game, South Pacific Games before that, didn't they? And the weather was fantastic.
Yeah.
So I don't know where that sort of come from.
When you're as a back, when you show up to that sort of conditions.
Oh, mate. I mean, you're just like, I might as well just have a little bath here, mate, because you're not going to get the ball. Yeah.
No.
You're just going to tackle all day.
Yeah.
I suppose it's a fullback. They might kick. You let it bounce, mate, and good luck to you.
It didn't bounce. Oh. It just basically stopped in water. It was unbelievable. So we can't really say much apart from, like you say, it looked like Tonga would dominate and up front, but Samoa getting the job done. Japan beat Fiji for the first time in 8 years, 34-21. So Jamie Joseph is doing something with his Brave Blossoms, which is the name of the team. He's not a gardener or something. No, but, yeah.
But, right through the Super Rugby competition, guys were coming in and out of the Sun Wolves and stuff like that. I mean, Jamie's a very, very smart man.
Yeah.
And there's a plan being put in place and they're following it through. And, you know, they have to do well at this World Cup, and he knows that.
Mm.
And this is not, you know, so I was intrigued to see this was their first real outing at this level, and they passed with flying colours. So, because Fiji look all right.
Oh, man, that's disappointing for them considering the way they played against the Maldi team.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, and you'd think they were two different teams as well, that when they challenged, well, they beat the Maldis over there, and then they went really close in Rotorua. So, they'll have to be disappointed with that effort, surely.
Fiji, I feel, are doing their own version of experimentation because they've got that amazing fullback, Vetekani, who played at first five and then back at fullback. So he's their sort of little player, X-factor tiny player coming through. But also they're sort of trying to integrate all these seven stars. You recognise the names and you go, oh, he literally does play lock. But he's playing sevens, and that is Nakarawa. So still no Semi Radradri out on the field. So I feel like Fiji have got a lot of improving to do. But I just looked at the World Cup groups, and Tonga, they're on a hiding to nothing with England, France, Argentina in the same pool, and even United States, who got a win the other day. Samoa, they could be licking their lips because they've got Ireland, Scotland, Japan, Russia in that game, in that pool. If they get their act together, that could be great. And then
Fiji's got the hardest, right?
Fiji, yeah.
But they could tip some teams. Well, they could, mate. They could, you know.
Done it before.
Well, Tonga's is harder than Fiji. They've got Australia and Wales ahead of them, Fiji, because Georgia and Uruguay there. Georgia's that sort of banana skin team, isn't it? Because they're sort of the opposite styles. But
and don't underestimate the US. I mean, I watched that game against Canada, and they're a big, powerful team. And I think the whole Major League Rugby, which you were one of the founders of, but I think it's really helped their game.
Yeah.
Because now they have, you know, all the players playing domestically are playing at a higher standard. They're bringing in the guys from overseas. And they put Canada away pretty comfortably.
They did, didn't they? Yeah. 47-19 in Denver. Yeah.
And Canada scored a couple of tries late too.
Yeah. So, and they relied on Tyler Ardron for an intercept. Yeah, the Chiefs player basically ran 50 metres for them.
Yeah.
So, USA sort of bossed it, didn't they?
They did. And there was that amazing moment where I've never seen this before. Someone kicked for the corner and it bounced off the corner flag and they scored from it.
The worst bounce of all time.
Yeah.
That was because the corner post is like that padded thing now, and it just provided enough of impetus for the ball to bend the post and then come back into play. And three players ran past it, and it just stayed there for the USA winger.
Would you start trying that on purpose?
I think that, you know, I always
feel you have to get enough weight. You know, if you get too much on it, she's going over.
Yeah.
Well, in league, they're kicking for the goalposts, aren't they? On the sixth,
they're a little bit bigger and heavier.
Yeah, so anyway, that looks like that's rugby. But as far as New Zealand's concerned, World Cup wise. If we beat South Africa in our pool play, we're most likely going to face.
I just stop Ireland. There. Don't say anything more.
Okay.
Don't say, but like all we will focus on is the game against South Africa.
Mm.
That I mean, that's such a huge challenge.
Yeah.
That, like, I'm not thinking beyond that. like all these games that we're playing between now and then are building up for that one moment. Mm. Like our World Cup is that one game.
Yeah.
So, you know, and what happens after that, who knows?
We go home. Oh, no, sorry, what?
We're going to play the next game.
Yeah, we're going to have a couple more. Yeah.
That's right, no, we should, and hopefully we stay after the quarter. Sorry, a bit emotional, and then we go home, we're at home.
No, look, we do, we will.
Who's sending you over? You should go home after that first game, mate. You're going over there for Crown Goes Wild, aren't you?
I'm staying for 3 weeks, exactly. I'm leaving after pool play because I won't be there for that gnarly quarterfinal, which if we do lose to South Africa, if the All Blacks do lose to South Africa, we're most likely going to play Ireland in the quarterfinal. Mills, does that worry you at all?
I think we just worry about that first. Traditionally, every time we played our first game, we've always done well. I'm just looking at the fact that, well, we can't control what happens on the other side. Because what do you say, who the Irish got? Well, you don't know, they could be tipped over as well. I mean, you look at the way they beat us on the end of your tour. Then England turned around and gave them a spanking.
Yeah.
So you just don't know. World Cup's World Cup, and we just focus on making sure we put the Bledisloe. That's important to me. Putting that Bledisloe away.
Yeah.
And then we'll head over to Japan, and we'll go from there.
That's right. So it does sound like it's a one game at a time scenario here with you two. Obviously, that's something that you did on Sports Cafe, wasn't it? The one game,
I think it makes sense. I think it makes sense.
It does. I mean, yeah, Mills is making sense. Fine. Okay, you agree. Everyone loves Mills. Look, okay, well, that's the end of the podcast. It still doesn't have a name. Thanks for tuning in.
Bill Ellis
Podcast, yeah, currently.
But it could,
for 1 week.
Something, yeah, next week could have a different name.
Yeah, okay.
Why don't you just give it a different name every week?
Hey, look, if you want to say goodbye to everyone.
We might get cut next week.
Yeah, okay. Until next time, we don't know when.